Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Hello, Sacred Rebels, and welcome. I'm Victoria Haffer, the host of Inspired Rebel Radio, a podcast where you get inspired to step outside the box, embrace your fears, and live your life as if the gate was left wide open. I am so excited to have a special guest today on the show, a true Sacred Rebel herself, Dina Davis. A native Texan, Dina started her professional career in London on the West End stage. She was in the original production of Popcorn by Ben Elton, which received the Oliver Award for Best Comedy in 1997. She is the founder and artistic director of Arts Alive, a nonprofit children's theater organization based in Rhode Island, and executive director of Action, Performance, and Leadership, an organization which teaches theater principles to business teams and individuals to increase performance, productivity, and presence. A forever student, a creativity junkie, and a single mom of 2 6-foot teenage boys. Dina Davis, everyone. Hey,
hello.
Dina, are you there? Hey, girl.
I'm here. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so excited to get to know a little bit more about all the amazing work that you do, about your nonprofit, and how you help people just live really, you know, amazing, powerful lives. So let's start with you telling us a little bit about your journey from your life in theater and how your story has inspired you to move into the coaching, leadership, and speaking world.
Right. Well, I'm happy to share. My life has really been such a weird journey, and pretty much anything that I planned, I kind of had to pivot and change along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I set up on a journey towards theater pretty focused from an early age. I lost my mother at the age of 10, and I think I was kind of left in this situation of feeling like I want to, you know, life is not permanent. And I think I realized that really young. So I thought, what do I want to do with my life? Because if I am cut off short, I want to make sure that I live my life to the fullest, that I'm doing something that I love. And somewhere in my teenage years, I discovered that what I was really passionate about was theater. So I set out and I went to California Institute of the Arts. And while I was there, I became obsessed with classical theater. And it just so happened, very serendipitous, we had a guest director come over from the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama who came and did our Shakespeare round and ended up inviting me to go and train in the UK. So at the time, I was like, this is my ticket, because all I wanted to do at the time was classical theater. Of course, I didn't realize that nobody really thinks that American actors can do Shakespeare over there. So I ended up over there, but could not land a job doing anything Shakespeare, but ended up kind of finding my niche as an American actor. So I ended up playing, I had a whole career doing a parody of myself, basically, which is, you know, kind of playing ditzy, gold-digging American types. But I had an amazing, I had amazing time of it. I learned so much. And I think through that process, I ended up finding my calling in another way, which is, I love that you use the term rebel, because I've always kind of been a bit of a rebel myself, and I was one of those people that I didn't want to wait tables like all the other actors were doing. So when I was between jobs, I thought, well, how can I still apply what I love doing but make a living at the same time? So I just threw myself out there and opened my first theater school for kids. It was just a weekend school. Ended up having like over 100 kids lined up out the door, and then the next thing you know, I've got a full-blown theater school happening in Wimbledon. And again, it was one of those things that like wasn't exactly planned, but I, through the process of teaching, I actually found this is what I'm meant to do. Even though I love being on stage, I trained as an actor, I still feel I am an actor, but I really felt that my whole journey as an actor really was leading to that point, to be able to take what I've learned and apply it to kids. And what's most fulfilling about that is seeing the change that it makes in them and in the way of self-confidence and helping them find passion and find purpose. And really what I've done along the way is again, translated that now into my next step of the next part of my journey, which is taking all these theater principles and giving them to adults and giving them to people in business who have really kind of lost their sense of purpose. Maybe they don't feel like they have passion they apply to their work. And it's I've kind of come up with a method that allows people to think artistically and find more meaning in their lives.
Mm.
To make a long story short.
Yeah, no, that was, there's a lot. And I have lots more questions. It's really fascinating. And I do love, being a spiritual healer, coach, equally right and left brain person. I do love how things just serendipitously, like you said, work out, how there's really no, coincidences and just all of that stuff. And that, all of the challenges that we have, I believe that prepare us for this other work, right? Our dharma, our divine life purpose, right? In what we're doing and moving forward. So that's really great and amazing. Now you speak of this being the age of the creatives, why the right brainers are going to take over the world, which I freaking love that. So can you tell us a little bit about this? And also, if you don't mind telling our listeners a little bit about the neuroscience of the brain, in case people aren't really real familiar with, left brain versus right brain, and, go tell us everything.
Okay, so I'll start with that first, just so that people have an understanding, because I think most people know the term, I'm a left brain thinker, or I'm a right brain thinker.
Sure.
And essentially, the left brain thinkers are the people that think very concrete, very sequential. They tend to be more numbers people that have meet things very structured and very organized. Whereas the right-brainers are the kind of abstract, random thinkers. They're the people that are more the creatives. They tend to be the artists. They just think differently and they live differently. Now, traditionally, kind of as we've gone through our, the whole of, the world and the world of business, we've been pretty much ruled by those concrete thinkers, those left-brain thinkers, mm-hmm. because they're the ones that sort of set up, the whole Industrial Revolution and the whole, the way our world has expanded has really been based on that concrete thinking and lots of data. Well, we've gotten so overrun by all the data and so completely consumed in technology that now suddenly what's becoming the most valuable asset are the things that can't be automated, and that is creativity. That's human connection. And I read a book by Dan Pink called A Whole New Mind. Totally recommend reading it. It really got me thinking about all this stuff. And he says that there's three things that are making creativity more important than ever. One is abundance. We have so much choice. Our choice in what we're going to buy or what we're going to do? There's so much choice. So what we really, when we make a choice about something, it's something that appeals to us on a different level, and usually because it speaks to our spirit in some way, and that's through creativity. And the second thing he says is automation, and that's the fact that so many jobs now are being completely automated. If you have a job that's very routine, good luck to you, because if you don't have something special or something different to offer, you're not going to have a job. Because I mean, even some of the jobs in law are completely automated. And then the third thing he thinks that it causes us a bit of a problem is Asia. It's the fact that so many jobs are being outsourced to Asia now. Mm-hmm. So if we have something to contribute, we really have to start thinking, what do I have that's going to connect with people that can't be taken over by a machine or can't be farmed out,
Yeah, you
so
need,
I think
I mean,
really
it,
it's...
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
We're kind of coming back to an era where we used to have the era of the craftsman, and I almost feel like we're coming full circle again, it's becoming important again that we are craftsmen, but this time we're craftsmen of ourselves, of our lives, and this realization that's happening now in this generation that, I can actually create not only the life that I want, but the person that I want to become, and that's pretty powerful, and it's a different way of thinking.
Yeah, it's a whole new mindset, right? As we know that as you and I, both being, coaches, we know that the mindset is the first thing. If you can't even imagine it, right, you can't create it.
Right.
So it's like we know that the limiting beliefs, the subconscious mind that runs the show, right, that just over and over again, that if we can't, shine that big flashlight on what's holding us back, which is really why coaches are so up and coming, right? Even though a lot of people still
right.
feel like they're not even sure what we do.
Right.
It's sort of
yeah,
like
exactly.
that. And then you're, yeah. And then when you realize how what an asset that we can be to everyone personally and professionally, it's
right.
pretty cool. Yeah.
And when I, you know, wow. and I have a tendency to tie everything back to education because I'm very drawn to young people because they're, you know, they're in the process of becoming, but we've got to get, you know, this message really has to come across to our young people too, because they're completely saturated with technology. My own two sons live in their computers and in their phones. But
yeah.
you know, this whole idea of, you know, who do you want to be, and you've got to start creating the person that you want to be. It's not going to be created for you by your iPhone.
It's true. It's true. I recently posted something on my Facebook page about how when we were kids, we were out in the mud and climbing trees, right? And, you know, didn't want to get
uh-huh.
home, street lights, you know, all that whole thing. And it's sort of like now the kids are so in the opposite end of tapped into and plugged into technology. And they
yeah.
don't, a lot of them don't even know how to play in that way anymore. They're playing, you know, electronic games with people all over the world, which is great, but then where's the true social connection, you know? Which,
yeah.
which I love about what
yeah.
you're doing, right? Because theater is that. You're like, you could probably be in movies, but it's a whole different experience to be in the theater.
To be live. Because part of
yeah.
part of live theater is that the audience is as much a part of the production as the actors on stage are. And the audience
right.
will completely change a show. So you might be able, like when I was in the West End, we had eight shows a week, and you're essentially, you're putting on the same show, but that show is completely different depending on how it's being received by the audience.
Yeah, the energy that's showing
that
up. That's cool. So speaking about actors and you know, how does the actor's process being an actor and how does that roll into the business world? And why should entrepreneurs start taking acting lessons or acting classes?
Well, so, I mean, I think if you say to most business people, oh, I think you should sign up for an acting class, they would probably either give you the finger or run away. I think you have to be kind of very gentle how you introduce that idea.
Absolutely.
what I do, I mean, I'm trying to sell businesses on the idea of having me or other artists come in and run workshops with them to give them an experience of having an atmosphere that they can play in, which is exactly what actors do in the rehearsal room. You're given, and I say this to my young actors that I work with, we give them a safety net where when they come in there, they can try anything. You're encouraged to fail. You screw up so that when you're out there, you know, in front of an audience or in the real world, you don't because you've practiced all of this stuff. So my whole idea is that it's getting people to think like actors so that they play bigger and so that they begin to create the character that they want to be in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try to explain that a little bit. The actual actor's process, if you do theater training, the first thing that they teach you is the teachings of Konstantin Stanislavsky, who was the great Russian acting teacher. And he says that to be a good actor, you have to follow certain principles. And the very first, and you're going to see how this relates to life and to business. But the very first thing you look at is what's my objective? Because if you go into a scene and you don't have an objective, then you're nothing more than just a body standing on stage and nobody wants to watch you. So the first process is what is my objective? The next thing you're looking at is what's my obstacle? What's in my way? And you can think of this in terms of, you know, maybe what a business team goes to. Then you look at, and this is where the creativity comes in, what will I do to overcome that obstacle? And there's not going to be just one solution. You're going to try this and it's not going to work. You're going to try this and it's not going to work. And this is all put in terms of how an actor, like if you and I are in a scene together and I want something, say I want to convince you that we are going to go to dinner at a certain restaurant. And the obstacle is you're tired, you don't want to go out. So then my job as an actor is to try all these different tactics to try and convince you to come around to my way of thinking, right? So then the other part of that process is that there are certain things that we classify an actor as being good or being not so good. And we tend to say, well, if we see a film or we see a play and somebody is not good, it's because we don't believe them. So thinking in terms of the way people in business communicate and relate to one another, there are certain ways we want, say, our boss or our colleagues to be authentic. We want them to be present when we're listening to us, not, you know, ignoring us while they're on a computer and you're telling them about something really important. We want authentic relationships. These are all elements that actors are taught so that they are, quote, unquote, good actors. And essentially it has nothing to do with acting. It has to do with becoming and being a person who is open and present, listening to other people, and going through a series of tactics to get what you want, hopefully in a positive way. Right?
Which is so interesting because it's almost like
it's...
Yeah, that's so cool. Go ahead, sorry.
There's just one last bit. There's a technical element, which the other part of acting is being able to use your voice properly. Well, this is something incredibly important in the business world today, especially as they say that, you know, presentation literacy, the ability to get up and speak, is more important than ever. Use of body language and your character.
Yeah.
So these are my weird theories.
No, I don't think they're weird at all. They make perfect sense, and I love it because when you just the word actor in it. Self, right, or actress, whatever we say. I know typically it's actor for both men and women. It's
right.
Like acting. You're playing a role, but at the same time, in order to be the best actor that you can be, all these things that you said are only going to make you better in real life, right? So it's wow.
Right.
I just love that. I love that, and it's everything I teach in my workshops and with my clients, right? It's that whole thing, presence, true presence, you know. Tracking sensations inside, being authentic, showing up, speaking your truth, right? Saying what you need, asking for what you need, all of those things. And then also, you know, shifting into that space of confidence, right? And showing up in the world, because there's a lot of business owners out there that are introverts, right? That, you know, entrepreneurs, business, you go into these networkings, you have to do your little elevator speech, you've got to speak to people. Maybe you got to do PowerPoint presentations in front of large groups of people, but it's not your nature to do those things.
Exactly.
And you talk a lot about confidence, right? So it's like confidence is sort of that's a whole, you know, we could talk the whole show about just confidence and where it starts from. Like, are we born with confidence? I mean, I think we kind of are as babies because little kids, for the most part, usually aren't afraid unless they've had some kind of trauma or neglect. They usually do expect everything, right? Until they learn not to.
Right.
And then things, then we lose our confidence once, you know, that teacher in the first grade that says, nope, you gave the wrong answer. And then we say, fine, I'm never going to speak up again for 20 years until then they see you or me as a coach. And then we work through that for them,
yeah.
But, you know, with them. But so talk to us a little bit about confidence and maybe giving us some like really practical tips on, people to increase their confidence just in general and personal and professionally, and especially when having to speak.
Right. So, well, I mean, I think this is a huge topic for one thing.
Yeah.
I have to just like start there.
Sure.
And I think it's confidence is probably what everybody deals with. Even the people that you think are the most confident probably aren't. They probably have just learned how to overcome it and they look more confident than they are. It's interesting thinking. I mean, I know you said it. I never actually thought about it that way. Like, are we born, we're all confident, and we all either lose our confidence because of the circumstances or we get even more confident? I never really thought about it that way. I think I definitely think confidence can be developed. But the most important thing to think about, and this is, you know, in the trainings that I do, we talk a lot about this, that we think we have to be confident to do something, to put ourselves out there, to try something new. And oftentimes we try and say, okay, I'm gonna work really hard and I'm going to learn as much as I do. And then when I feel confident, I'm going to go out and pitch my idea or I'm going to go out and introduce myself to that person.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work that way because confidence is actually gained through the experiences that you have. So
Absolutely. You
have to first commit yourself to being courageous. And then you go out there and then through the experience, you become confident out the other end of it. And if you don't believe me, I think if you look at any of the big achievements that you've made in your life and you think, okay, that's something I'm really proud of. Like for myself, I'm really proud that I packed my bags and I took off to the UK when I was 20 years old by myself. Like if I thought about that now, I'd be like, oh, my God, I'd have to be thinking about all the details and I don't think I could do that. But you, when you look at things that you're proud of and then you think, was I confident at the beginning of that? No, not really. I was just courageous. Am I confident as an after effect? Yes, because I learned all these skills from it, and now I know I can put myself in a situation like that again because I know I survived it and I got something out of the other end of it. And I think this is really important to think about for not only for children but also people in business, because the more that we think we have to be perfect, we're in paralysis. We won't do anything.
That's right.
And that's the biggest killer of confidence, because then you think, if only I would have.
Right. Sure.
So I just
sure.
need to throw confidence out the window and just say, you know what, I'm not confident. I'm scared, you know, I don't want to say a bad word, but I'm scared beepless.
No,
I'm going to do it anyway.
No, we're good. We there's a, yep, you can say whatever you want on this show. it's not
okay,
rated G.
I wasn't too confident about that subject.
No, I love it. And I love it. And I love, you know, that is a sacred rebel. You know, that's the thing in teaching, you know, the brand that I've created and working with my clients is to just show up in all your glory, the messy, the unconfident, the scared, shitless, you know, beautiful parts of you, you know, it's just, that's it. And I think that's what authenticity is. It's like, people always say to me that they think I'm fearless. And I'm like, first of all, fearless is stupid. Right. If you're not afraid of anything, that's stupidity. But yeah, I'm courageous as hell. Right. And you know what?
Right.
And I tell them, I am not fearless. I am full of fear all the time, but I'm doing it anyway. So yeah, I get it. And so I think the more people like you and I, that probably people think that we're not afraid of anything. And for us to stand up in front of a group of people and say, you know what? I'm afraid. Yeah. Things scare me. This scares me.
I am scared every day.
Yep.
Absolutely. But
absolutely.
I mean, I sort of adopted this new mantra. I went through a divorce. I'm coming up on 2 years now, and I decided my new mantra was that I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna live large, and I'm gonna do it sloppy.
Because yeah.
If I try and live large and say, and I'm gonna be amazing, there's an idea of just ship it. Ship
it.
Your art.
Love it. Awesome. Yeah, and as people like us. Like, you know, it's just so cool because giving, and not that we need to give permission to anybody, but as we start to show people like, whoa, like this is who we are, and really showing up in that space of my favorite word on the planet, vulnerable.
Yep.
You know, talking about Brené Brown and, you know, Daring Greatly and all of those things and her TED Talk on vulnerability, which I think really has started to, you know, I'm teaching a presentation on vulnerability is the new black, and teaching people how to use vulnerability as a superpower, really, in your life, in business, and in your personal life. But it's like giving more and more people that permission to be vulnerable and to really show up in who they are. It's just, I just think, and then that taps into the whole creativity market, right? Of that whole thing.
Yeah.
And so it's
I love it. I mean, I'm like the biggest fan of Brené Brown in the world. I think she's amazing. And I think even to simplify the whole idea of vulnerability down even more, like whatever we do, whatever job we do, whatever goals we have, they're usually to do with some kind of a connection with other people, whether it be helping other people, reaching other people, justice for other people, whatever it is. But you can't connect. Nobody will connect with somebody else who they think is just perfect.
Right.
You know, people connect with you because they see vulnerability in you, and you become real to them.
Yeah,
usually, if we see someone who's like, oh, they're perfect, I can't relate to them at all, I can't even go there because they make me feel so bad about myself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's
exactly
why
we
have to show our vulnerability.
We have to. It's time. Everybody step up. So,
yes.
Listeners, if you want to call in and speak to us, have a question for Dina, the call-in number is 646-716-7979. We'd love to hear from you. So I've heard you mention in, you know, going through a lot of your material, the concept of improvisational leadership. Tell our listeners a little bit more about that. What's that all
about?
So
this is it's a program that I'm developing with a professor friend of mine who teaches at Providence College, and he's a leadership expert. We met at a conference, I think probably a couple years ago, and we got to talking, and we thought it would be interesting to combine our efforts. And we've done a lot of studies around this and come up with this theory. And when you hear the word improvisational leadership, you think, well, that makes no sense, because that makes it sound like a leader is going to be just doing something off the cuff or making things up as you go along. And that's not That's not what improv is about. I mean, if you look at the greatest improvisers, they're not really making things up as they go along. They're being open and listening mm-hmm. to others, but they're operating mm-hmm. through a series of principles that they study. So yeah. the whole idea of improv is based around principles. And the principles, and this is my side of it, so his, you know, the professor's side of it, his name's Professor Matthew Erickson, his side of it is all about how, you know, leadership in organizations, and mine is about, well, how do the theater principles, again, play into that. So just to give you an example of some of them, we call them the maxims of improvisation. So the first maxim of improv is the ability to say yes and. So it's saying whatever somebody's coming at you with, rather than blocking them and saying yes, but.
But, oh my God, I hate that
on.
Word,
and, yeah.
Love
so the idea of an improv, I mean, the way that you have a scene in improv, if you say to me, oh, your hair is blue, and I say, no, it's not, then I've completely blocked you in the scene. If I say yes, and I dyed it this way to match my nails, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And then another one of the big principles in improv is the maxim of letting go of your need to control, which I think is a huge one. If you think in the business world, sometimes we want to control outcomes, and by that, by trying to control outcomes, you're not allowing your team to come up with any new ideas
exactly.
or to solve problems. So you can see how a lot of these things translate so well. And then, and another, you know, another big principle of improv is again that word presence. It's being present. It's being there. It's listening. It's being right there with your scene partner, face to face, not thinking about your shopping mm-hmm. list or worrying about what's going to happen next week.
Mhm. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. It sounds like I'm intuitively already doing that in a lot of my places and spaces because, you know, I teach workshops and trainings and curriculums and teacher trainings and everything. Mm-hmm. And I always come to the table with an agenda, right? And things that we
right.
need to accomplish. At the same time, I'm very, you know, allowing in the approach of, you know, tapping into the energy of the group and what do they actually need in that moment. And so it's often
right. That's improv.
Okay. Awesome. Look at me. I'm already improv.
You're a pro.
Let's start a group.
And oh, there's one more principle, too, that I really love that people don't think about this because everybody tends to be so, you know, people worry about themselves and about being significant and looking good. And I want people to think I'm smart and I'm clever and I'm intelligent. But one of the main principles of improv, and I love this one, is always make your partner look good.
Oh.
Don't you think that's powerful? I mean, if everybody in an office space was thinking, instead of like, I want to make sure that I look good in front of my boss, it's, you know what, I want to make sure that this person next to me looks amazing, and I'm going to be a part of that. It just changes the whole entire dynamic of a team and the way that they work together.
Oh, my God. Well, it's like, it's so great because, again, I've seen that so many times. It's like instead of someone wanting to throw somebody else under the bus, right? Why didn't this get done? And everybody's always wants to put blame and point the finger. And as we know, our ego, the primary source of our ego is to look good and to be right. Right. So it's like all our little, we're all a bunch of like little kids inside human bodies, always wanting, pick me, make me look good.
Exactly.
And it's like,
because we're scared.
Like, oh,
because it's fear.
I love it. I love that. I love that so much. And it's so powerful, and then you don't have to worry about getting like cut down if you know that is part of the principles, and then you're going out of your way to make other people feel good. It's just amazing. Like
exactly.
Let's teach everyone
and in the
about
process,
this.
You know, someone has your back as well.
Mhm. So good. I love it.
I love it.
I love
this stuff. I could talk all day. We could be here till midnight.
We will be here till midnight. We'll just tell our producer to go off. We'll just have an 8-hour talk show. It's okay. So tell people. So this is really amazing stuff. So are you in the process of creating this, or is this something that people can get in touch with you now and actually get involved? And do you have to be local to Rhode Island, or is this like in webinar format?
It's not a webinar. At the moment, this is live workshops, and we literally have just finished developing the improvisational leadership project. So we're testing it at universities amongst staff and professors and deans, and then after that, we're gonna start taking it into the actual office environment and letting people see how it can transform their team.
Amazing, so great. So as coaches, we know that the most important relationship that we have is actually the one with ourselves, right? So what strategies yep. do you personally use on a day-to-day basis to stay healthy, productive, and balanced physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually?
Yeah, well, I love that you're saying that because I don't think we can – we all want to be successful. We all want to do well at what we do. But we cannot be successful if we don't first work on ourselves. And that is something that I am only just realizing. So I almost feel like – I mean,
Mom.
Seriously, I mean, I'm 48 years old, but I'm a mother. I've gone through the whole thing of the, you know – I'll do everything for my kids, and then I go through divorce. I have to survive. We have to pay the bill, you know. And then I find that the person I'm looking after the least is the one that's actually, you know, the one that's steering the ship. You know, it's the whole oxygen mask theory. And you've got to look after yourself, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm starting to, and this is new. This is new for me too. So I'm not by any means going to act like I'm an expert, but I am. I'm going by the stuff that I'm learning. I'm trying to apply everything that I learned. So one of the things that I'm learning is to work, to do deep work in short bursts. So I will sit down for 2 hours solidly, get rid of all distractions, and work solidly on whatever it is I'm working on for that 2 hours. And then I force myself to get up and move, because the whole idea of sitting at a desk or sitting in a chair, you may think you're being the most creative person. You block all your own energy. So I'm getting myself up a couple of times a day, even if I just go walk up and down the street, just to get myself moving. And I'm studying a lot about nutrition. I went vegan a couple years ago. I lost 25 pounds. I'm not strict about it. I'm not religious about it, but I'm trying to be careful about putting things into my body that I know my body, it just doesn't react. It doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not a nutrition expert, and I'm not somebody who says, oh, I eat wonderfully, but I'm becoming in my late 40s more conscious that the stuff that I put in is going to affect who I am. So I'm trying more and more to put organic, healthy things into my body.
Yeah, getting back to the whole foods, right? I am a holistic nutritionist, so, you know, if you need anything, let me know so I can, you know, give you any words of advice.
Oh, great. I'd love your advice on that. And I would say the single most important change I've made in my life is to start meditating, which I did to get myself through my awful divorce. And it's become a habit, and it's a good habit. So it's something that I now do. I try and do the bookends where I try and do a meditation when I wake up in the morning. So I can really think, what do I want this day to look like? Who's the person I want to be? Who do I want to show up as today? And and practice gratitude, which really, really puts you in such a great state of mind.
Absolutely.
And then I try and finish off my day. And I got to be honest, sometimes my meditation at night, I end up falling asleep. But through the process, I'm trying to be grateful for everything that I learned and the people that I came in contact with that day.
Yeah, so it sounds pretty simple. Yeah, it's great. And again, meditation also, I'm a meditation teacher and, you know, yoga therapist. And so people often say, I need to meditate, but then they don't know how to meditate. And, you know, the big thing that gets people stuck is that, you know, we think we need to be an expert and go to courses and go to all these trainings to learn how to do something, when truly what meditation is taking a few moments, right, to be present with what is. Right. So it's honing in on the art of being mindful and then just taking some time. And there's actually many different styles and traditions of meditation. But, you know, keeping it simple, guided meditations are really great, you know, for people to listen to start, especially like Deepak, you know, and Oprah.
They do all of those.
Yeah. And it's great. So those are guided meditations, and it's a nice way to kind of give the monkey mind something to do. And then as people want to, you know, and there's walking meditations. And so really what it is, it's just taking the time to create awareness around just our breath, right? And what's happening now. What's happening now? That's it, right? That's simple. So that's so great. I'm so glad that you found meditation in a form of meditation that works for you. It's profound. It's so simple.
It really is, and it is absolutely life-changing, and I can't say it I can't say it enough, but if anybody were to make one change in their life, to find time to meditate,
right.
especially in this crazy, busy, overstimulated world. Even
right.
if it's,
that's
you
right.
know, even if you say I'm taking 2 minutes of my, taking 2 minutes for me
that's
right now to just
that's
breathe.
Right. That's right. On that note, once again, we'd love to hear from you. Caller 646-716-7979. Feel free to give us a call. Yeah, and they have little apps out there, super easy apps, right, that just say, you know, give you, after 5 minutes, the little ding bell goes and, you know, your meditation is done.
Oh, that's right. I heard about those. Yeah. I'll try that out.
Yeah, there's some really great. Mindspace, I think, is one of them. A really easy, simple, I think it's a free app. And anyway, so it's good. It's so great. Meditation. I love it. Let's see. So.
It's funny. It's on that same topic. It's funny because
sure.
I'm trying to introduce the kids that I work with, and I know that they hear it. They kind of make fun of me, and I don't care because I let them make fun of me. But we were doing summer camps. It's vulnerability, right? We were doing
yep.
summer camps this summer, and right before the performances, we would all go backstage into these rooms to kind of calm down before they're going to perform because they get nervous. And it just so happened that the Oprah Deepak. You know, it was that week that the meditations
yeah.
were on, so
yeah.
I had all my kids lie down on the floor. And we kind of made a joke out of it, but at the same time, they started asking me for it. Like, the next day, they were like, can we listen to that Deepak meditation again? And they love saying the mantras because they're, you know, they sound funny.
Love it.
But they still got something. I mean, they wanted that time. So
I'm telling you, it is
something
it is.
They should have in schools.
I agree. Oh, yeah, we could have a whole show on that, right, as far as what that's all about. But absolutely, I find that kids are very open to the process of that, you know, yoga and meditation and mindfulness, and they actually welcome it, the unplugging, right, from all the technology.
Oh, my gosh,
yeah.
The pressure
yeah.
that's on these kids now, I mean, just
mm-hmm.
We all feel it. We all feel like I need space, and imagine what it's like to be a kid in school right now.
Yeah. So, Dina, you talk about spine as the new F word. So tell us a little bit
yeah.
more about what you mean by that.
So I don't want to take credit for this because it actually comes from an expression that Mel Robbins, I don't know if you've ever seen Mel Robbins talk. She's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love this phrase and I'm kind of living by it. So part of what I try and do in my keynotes or in my trainings or even with the kids that I work with is about getting people to live larger. So show up and live bigger and stop going on autopilot and living this kind of mediocre way because it's safe. So when you ask somebody, oh, hi, how are you? And they say, I'm fine.
Mm.
Like if you just think about the words that you're
no,
saying,
totally.
Don't choose a vocabulary.
No.
Don't
no.
choose a vocabulary that's going to give you a mediocre life. Even if you're
exactly.
feeling like crap that day,
oh.
say, you know what? I am fantastic. You know,
yeah.
and you
it's
stay
so,
it long enough,
so,
you're going to feel it.
Well, it's just funny you say that because I've always been pet peeve. That's always been a pet peeve of mine, that word fine. I don't even
yeah.
know where it
it's
came
awful.
From. And I just say, when people say I'm fine, I go, well, what does that even mean? What does fine mean? Like, you're just accepting the way things are. Like, yeah, it's so funny. I get so triggered when people say it. I love
yeah.
it. I love that you,
yeah,
that you love that.
Like a wimpy, it's
thing.
Like a wimpy word. And in the same way, I'll say to actors that they're giving me a gesture, like you say, raise your hands, and they kind of half raise their hands.
Right.
And I'll
like
say, why are you giving
bitch.
Me wimpy movements? Wimpy movements get wimpy reactions off your audience. So if you say
that's
a wimpy
right.
word, like, oh, fine, you know,
mm-hmm.
well, your world's going to be wimpy.
Right.
And
right.
vocabulary, language is very strong. And the way that we speak to ourselves, the words that we speak, we need to be a lot more intentional about it,
absolutely.
I believe.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I trained with Tony Robbins and he talks about transformational vocabulary. And so that's a huge part of the training that I teach people because, again, what we think, right, what we say, right, creates a reality. It starts there. And so, you know, the self-talk that we have with ourselves, that's the other thing, right, especially as women. We're like, what are we saying? What is that language that's happening? Would you speak to your best friend like that? You know, would you speak to your child
mm-hmm.
like that? It's just like, yeah, it's time to get – the other thing that drives me crazy, and tell me how you feel about this, is when I talk to women, and again, a lot of my clients – I work both with men and women, but women just in particular that feel selfish. The word selfish, first of all, drives me crazy. And this happened literally a week ago, working with a client. And I said, well, you know, obviously it sounds like you're out of balance. You're not grounded. You know, you're not taking care of you. And she said, well, that makes me feel selfish. And I said, I was like, I got to take it. You know, I said, what does that even mean to be selfish? So, you know, what are your thoughts around that?
Well, I mean, I think to use the word selfish that way is just full of guilt. And to me, that's just mental conditioning of growing up to feel that you don't have a right to take any time for yourself. You're not worth it.
Yeah.
So, I'm not a fan of that word either. I think we need to be more selfish. I don't think we're selfish enough.
And by that,
I don't mean that we're not giving. I mean, life is about giving and sharing with others, so I don't mean that. But again, oxygen mask, you can't give to others if you're not in a good place yourself.
Fill up the bank account. There's only so much you can send out, right? If you're in a negative balance of checks and balances. So absolutely. So we all know that clutter can be a nuisance to us. Quite a bit. So tell us a little bit about the importance of purging both our physical clutter, but also our mental clutter.
Right. So this is something a really good friend of mine, her name's Kathy Castrava, and I work with her here in Rhode Island, and we've developed a women's workshop called Build Your Professional Imprint, and it's about sort of designing your life from the inside out and the outside in. And a big section of that training is on this very topic on clutter and how if your physical space is cluttered, you tend to feel the same way mentally. And we need to do a purging not only of our physical space but also of our mental space. And to me, the physical space is kind of easy. That's just a matter of saying, I'm going to dedicate this amount of time. I'm going to clean my office. And I always feel better for it. The mental clutter is more difficult to clear away because we hang on to stuff. I have all kinds of mental clutter. And for me, my mental clutter, I count as the negative thoughts that don't serve me, the memories that are not serving me, the self-talk that doesn't serve me. That's all clutter. You've got to be really conscious about getting rid of that stuff and forming new habits so that the clutter doesn't come back, because the default will always be to come back to that place.
Right. And I use the example, and people usually get it when I say this. Like, they'll say, for example, maybe they don't talk to their mother anymore, and they're like, I'm good with that part of my life. And I'll say, well, you're not, because it's like you know how you have your computer open and you have like 25 tabs open, right? And so they're all sitting there playing in the background, pulling from your energy field, right? At the same time, it's pulling from your RAM on your computer. And until you actually work through it, right, get to the core of the issue, it's always going to be pulling from your energy, even though you try not to look at it. It's sort of like, don't look at that. I'm good with that. You know, it's like when you drive by the accident and everyone just wants to look at it, and you're like, no. And you're drawn to it, but yet at the same time, you think you've dealt with it. And so that would be also considering like that clutter, right?
Exactly. And you cannot ignore it. You can ignore it, but we all know it just keeps eating away at you.
Sure.
And as you say that, I have my computer open and I have like 25 tabs of things that I'm not dealing with. So you just made me think.
Oh my God.
Dang it, she got me.
I did catch you. Yeah. And you'll notice shut down some of those tabs and that computer is going to work a lot more efficiently. And it's sort of, you know, the old resentments, the harboring, all of those things that we think, you know, we've dealt with that are still sitting there. Coming to that place and space.
I love the Brian Tracy training of eat the frog. Like if you would just wake up in the morning and saying, what are the things that I least want to do today? And just do them. Then at least your day to do all the stuff that you enjoy doing.
I love it. That's so good. That's great.
There's so much.
So much. So what? Oh, okay. So a few other things. Tell us, who would be your ideal client? And I know that you work with adults and you work with kids. So who would be your ideal client? And maybe give us some results that you have achieved with some of your clients.
It's such a funny question. I know that like we're especially as business owners, we're told, you know, you've got to be really, really specific who you want to work with. And for one thing, for some reason, the people that need the work that I offer somehow show up. I don't always pursue. And that's a whole other that's another conversation. Maybe we could touch on it in a minute. I don't always pursue the client that I want. I kind of I'm sort of operating a little bit differently. Like I'm putting out there to the world the work that I do because I love it and I believe it and I'm passionate about it. And the people who seem to kind of connect with that seem to come to me anyway. I seem to work a lot with young people, and I'm feeling that a lot of the work that I am doing, not only in theater but also in the personal development stuff, I really want to reach teenagers, in particular teenage girls. So that's an area that I'm kind of, you know, the work that we're doing on the brand for women. It's like, well, what if you worked with young girls, middle school and high school, and help them develop their personal brand before they're even out there in college? Because that's another conversation about how people are going off to college thinking they're following some blueprint for success in life, and they don't even know what they want to do yet. Right. So the young people, I'm looking to expand with that. And also, I think corporate America, I think there's a lot of people that are just showing up to work, and I don't think that they're necessarily happy. I don't think they're necessarily fulfilled in their job. And I would love to I'd love to get in some of those companies and let them play and do things like the improv and, you know, give people the opportunity to talk about what they want, what their goals are, either within a company or even outside of. And I think the more that companies focus, if companies would invest more on this type of training for their staff, they'd find that their staff are happier and more invested and do better work.
Yeah.
Because people want to work on themselves. They want to be happy. People want to grow. You just forget that, I can be in my 40s and 50s and I can still grow.
Or they think it's just too late, right? And again, because of the limiting beliefs, the stuff that they've been sold when they were little girls or little boys, is thinking this is what life is, right? I go to work 40 to 50 hours a week. I get a paycheck, you know, and then instead of actually feeling like, wow, you mean I could actually do what I love and make, you know, good money doing it and be prosperous and abundant and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's like it just gets back to that whole mindset thing again, right? And we're like, whoa, do you deserve to be, like, I have one client I'm working with, and basically she didn't really, subconsciously didn't believe that she deserved love or joy in her life, right? So if those things are running the show, then, you know, she's just going to keep taking a whole pile of bullshit and just, you know, just sitting through days that are not fulfilling, like you said, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the way that we're kind of, the messages that we're given as we grow up, we're given the message, go to college, then you get a job, then you get married. We're kind of given this idea once I've got the job and I'm married, I'm there, I've arrived. There's nothing
Right. And then, so we're breaking the mold, basically, and we're just saying, what is it, you know, what do you want? What can you imagine? Right?
What do you have to contribute? You know, everyone's got something to contribute to the world in whatever capacity that is. Because I think that's where fulfillment really comes from, is finding how do you take what you love and you're passionate about and somehow serve the rest of the world with that.
Absolutely. So what are some of the life-changing books or speakers or people that have inspired you and have helped to mold you, who you are today?
Oh, good Lord. You know what? There are so many. I was thinking if I had to share, you know, what are some of the top books I've read that have changed my life, I could probably reel off about 25. For this conversation, one of the books I read recently, which just really resonated with me, is Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. She's the woman that wrote Eat, Pray, Love. Big Magic is not, it makes it sound like it's a book for artists, but it really isn't. It's kind of the crux of everything that I am about, which is getting people to realize that whatever you do, see your work as an art. You are an artist. Take whatever, even if you, you know, if you work in a coffee shop, if you're a waiter or whatever, that if you see your work as art, you're going to have an impact on other people, and you can change lives. I mean, think of the restaurants that you like to frequent. Well, you may like the food, but another big reason why you go back to a restaurant is because you like the way you're treated when you're there. You have a rapport, a relationship with a waiter.
That's so true.
Yeah.
If you could have lunch with a famous person, alive or passed on, who would that be and why?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, well, one thing I'd love to sit down with somebody like Meryl Streep. And the reason for, I mean, she's a phenomenal actor, but she's so much more than that. And she somehow has avoided the trap of becoming a celebrity and not being herself anymore. She's celebrity only in that so many people love and adore her, and we all knew who she is, and she's made all these films. But she doesn't jump on that celebrity train. She doesn't play those games. She's, I believe her husband, she's married to an art gallery owner or something. She just seems to have such integrity with her own beliefs and who she wants to be. She just seems to me, I would love to sit down and just pick her brain on, you know, how does she choose the roles that she wants to play? Because she truly, I mean, talk about someone who's able to be authentic in whatever role she decides to play. You know, a lot of actors, you see them in roles and you say, oh, they're really just playing themselves in every part that they play. Because, and that is what actors do. You put yourself in a different situation and that's how you play the role. But there's something about Meryl Streep, she's able to completely morph.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. She's phenomenal. Yeah.
I would love to talk, and I'd love to sit down with Brené Brown, just because I feel like, you know, if you and I and Brené could sit down, she's just
to
read her books, and you feel like she's your best friend.
Let's manifest that one, right?
Yeah, let's.
That'd be great. That's great. Yeah, I'd love to get her to come to some of the. I'm running a few expos coming up, the health expo and the wellness expo, and. You know, looking for some keynote speakers. I'm like, oh, I put her on the list.
Oh, let's get Brené. But I'm sure she knows, but she's sort of started a huge movement just through this really simple idea of just crack open and be real.
Yep.
It's pretty powerful.
Love it. Yeah, and again, her dharma, right? That's what part of her purpose in life was to do that and to spark it and to become the Pied Piper of vulnerability. And then, you know, it's amazing what it does, right? So,
Another great thought leader is Simon Sinek. I love him too. I don't know if anyone's read Start With Why. For those of us who are entrepreneur types, really, really important book to read, because everything comes back to your why you do what you do.
Wow. Yeah. Love it. I haven't heard that. I'll have to check it out. That's great. So any last words of wisdom you would like to share with our listeners? We certainly had a informational packed session today. So anything else you'd like to share?
I came across a quote last week. I was doing a training with another friend of mine, and this quote popped up. Again, it was after meditation, and for some reason it popped up on my computer, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is such a great quote. So I will share this with the listeners. And it's a quote from Aristotle, and it is that you are what you repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, it's the habits that we've created, and right?
We are what we do. So if we get up and we complain every single day, or we get up and we're, you know, lazy or unhappy or talking bad about other people or whatever, that's what you become. And if we intentionally choose our habits and just get more conscious about our actions minute to minute, day to day, we're going to create an extraordinary world, not just an extraordinary existence, I believe.
Right. Absolutely. Wow. Oh, what a gift today to be able to spend a whole entire hour with you. So, Dina, let everybody know how they can get in touch with you. And, you know, if if they have questions or if they want to work with you or find out more about your programs and especially your nonprofit, Arts Alive, which is in Barrington, Rhode Island, a nonprofit helping kids build character and grow up real on stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in Arts Alive, it's a nonprofit children's theater organization that I started with a friend of mine when I moved back to the United States. And essentially I'd seen how the budget cuts were beginning to eliminate the arts from the schools. So we set up this nonprofit school play and put it back into the school. So there's an after-school program that we partner with all the incredible artists that just seem to come out of the woodwork in the community. And then we bring out professional artists and we go in and we work with the kids and teach them all of these principles that we've been talking about and get them to translate it into plays, which is what they love, the performance. Right now we're in Rhode Island. My dream, it's one of my big goals, is I want this model to spread everywhere because I think every child should have the opportunity to be exposed to theater. And it's not about making actors. It's about the skills that they gain from taking part in theater that they can apply to anything. So if people want to learn more about Arts Alive, they can go to www.artsalivebarrington.org or they can reach out to me via email. And my email address through Arts Alive is ddavis@artsalivebarrington.org. And that's two R's in Barrington. And my other business, which is the work that I do in the corporate business in the university sector, is my company called Action Performance and Leadership. And if you could see that, you'd know that ACT, A-C-T, is in capital letters because it's the premise of the whole business is about coming from the principles of acting. So the website is action-leadership.com, and you can reach out to me personally. I do answer every email myself, and I can be reached at dinadavis@action-leadership.org, or you can link in with me. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere.
Dina gets around. All right, sister, you're awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today, and I will see you on Tuesday for lunch.
I can't wait.
Thank you so much, listeners, for hanging in here. A few amazing events coming up to put on the calendar for our local New Englanders. The Health Expo at the Warwick Mall on Saturday, January 14th, 2017, and the Wellness Expo on Sunday, April 2nd, my birthday. We are now taking applications for exhibitors and presenters. Email me for more information. Once again, I'm your host, Victoria Haffer, and you can reach me at victoriahaffer.com. Thank you for joining us on Inspired Rebel Radio, your place to be inspired to step outside the box, embrace your fears, and live your life as if the gate was left wide open. Live a sacred rebel life, fierce, adventurous, and free. Have a great day.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.